This is your community radio station, 88.3 Southern FM.
Where we are now going to have the space show. Starships were meant to fly, hands up and touch the sky. Can't stop cause we're so high, let's do this one more time. Welcome to the Space Show, presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. Hello, I'm Andrew Rennie. On this week's The Space Show, Aussie involvement in last week's Transporter 12 mission. But first, we're going to have some Space Show news. Last Wednesday, a Falcon 9 rocket launched from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. Aboard were 131 satellites, yes, count them all, 131 satellites bound for sun-synchronous orbit some 520 kilometres above the Earth. Now, last week, we were unsure of how many satellites from the Adelaide-based company Fleet Space Technologies were aboard the mission, which SpaceX called Transporter 12. Early manifests had listed three of their Centauri mineral exploration satellites. But for reasons unknown to us here at the Space Show, the third, called Centauri 9, was not aboard. While this post by Fleet on the website LinkedIn.
Today, Fleet Space Technologies' most advanced satellite models, Centauri 7 and Centauri 8, were launched on SpaceX's Transporter 12 rideshare mission. At a time of rising global urgency to accelerate discovery of energy transition minerals, we are proud to unlock new innovations with our satellite network as we expand our end-to-end exploration platform, Exosphere, in support of customers worldwide. It's a long road ahead, but we are thrilled to take another bold step into the future of exploration with you.
Elsewhere, under the headline, Fleet Space's Exploration Satellite Network Expands with Next-Gen Centauri Satellites, the company issued this statement.
Fleet Space Technologies, the leading Australian space exploration company, announced the successful deployment of two next-generation Centauri satellites during the Transporter 12 rideshare mission, launched by a SpaceX Falcon 9 from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. The launch of Centauri 7 and Centauri 8, Fleet Space's most advanced satellites to date, will increase capacity of its proprietary satellite network to support the expansion of its end-to-end mineral exploration platform, Exosphere, while building on its world-first, microsatellite-enabled SATCOM capabilities. The deployment of Centauri 7 and Centauri 8 comes at a time of increasing global demand for satellite-enabled applications to enhance the efficiency, sustainability, and success rates of mining operations to accelerate discovery of energy transition minerals worldwide. Used by global mining leaders like Rio Tinto, Barrick, and Goldfields, Exosphere integrates Fleet Space's proprietary satellites, smart sensors, and artificial intelligence to image mineral systems in real time while minimizing environmental impact. Since the launch of Exosphere in 2023, more than 40 industry-leading exploration companies have used the technology on projects across five continents. Co-founder and Chief Executive Officer of Fleet Space, Flavia Tatinardini said,
"Frontier technologies that incorporate the latest advances in space, AI, and big data are essential to address the dual challenges of climate change and space exploration. By making these new capabilities rapidly deployable in a way that complements modern mining operations on a global scale, Exosphere is charting a course to transform the exploration sector and accelerate mineral discovery before net zero targets fall permanently out of reach,"
Powered by space and AI, the end-to-end capabilities of Exosphere have driven widespread exploration results for mining companies since its launch, leading to FleetSpace closing a $150 million Australian dollar Series D funding round with a valuation of more than $600 million in December. Led by Teachers Venture Growth, the late-stage venture arm of Canada's Ontario Teachers Pension Plan, and joined by a number of existing investors, the investment will be used to expand the capabilities of Exosphere to enhance data-driven exploration for minerals needed for Earth's clean energy future. In parallel with the global adoption of Exosphere, FleetSpace has continued to drive a pipeline of breakthrough innovations in the space sector. Last year, FleetSpace's Centauri 4 became the world's smallest voice-enabled satellite, preceding the demonstration of resilient, low-cost full-duplex SATCOMs for the Australian Defence Force. In collaboration with MIT Media Lab's Space Exploration Initiative, FleetSpace is also helping to drive strategic off-world research to inform planning of future missions to the Moon, Mars, and beyond. In 2026, the lunar variant of Exosphere's smart seismic sensors, called SPIDER, will be deployed on the Moon to unlock new insights about its subsurface. Centauri 6, FleetSpace's next-generation satellite model, was also launched on SpaceX's Bandwagon 1 mission. Matt Pearson, co-founder and chief exploration officer at FleetSpace, added,
"The fusion of space innovation, AI, and rapid 3D subsurface imaging is key to establish permanent research stations on the Moon and Mars within our lifetime. By advancing Earth's subsurface understanding with Exosphere, we are building the blueprint for scalable, data-driven exploration systems needed for new worlds, marking a bold new era in space exploration. Advancing the capabilities of microsatellites is a critical part of this effort to make sure explorers of our solar system have the tools to achieve mission objectives faster and with greater precision, ultimately maximizing their precious time on other worlds."
Now, when I checked yesterday with the United States Space Force, they still hadn't entered the orbital elements for any of the 131 satellites launched on that Transporter 12 mission. So I can't tell you the ID. The launch is 2025-009, being the ninth launch of this year. So maybe we'll find out in a few weeks' time which particular satellites the Centauri 7 and 8 are. The Sydney-based company HEO Robotics had an interest in one of the satellites aboard the Transporter 12 launch. A few weeks ago, they made this announcement.
"Coming soon, our Holmes 007 camera will launch aboard Impulse Space's Myra, boosting our in-space capabilities. Designed and built by our team, Holmes is integrated as a hosted payload on the Myra space vehicle and will capture high-resolution imagery of in-space objects as they pass through Myra's field of view. The launch is part of SpaceX's Transporter 12 mission."
HEO Robotics makes precision cameras that are hosted on other companies' satellites to take images of other satellites. So let's jump back to July of last year when William Crow, the chief executive officer of HEO Robotics, was speaking. Now, in his talk, he refers to LEO, L-E-O, that means low Earth orbit. MEO is medium Earth orbit, and GEO, G-E-O, is geostationary Earth orbit. So let's hear from William Crow.
Without further ado, I want to announce Will Crow, Dr. Will Crow, CEO and founder of HEO Robotics.
Thanks for coming, everyone, tonight. As Christian said, I am Dr. Will Crow, CEO and co-founder of HEO. And what we do is image satellites from other satellites and get insights on them. But we have ambitions for so much more. So I want to quickly talk about that, why that's important. And then talk through some of the really interesting stuff we've been working over the last year to help our customers and help reach that future as well. Sir, our mission at HERE is to image anything in the solar system on demand. So, woo! That's awesome. There are millions and millions of objects in the solar system, most of which are untracked. And those that are tracked, we pretty much know nothing about them. So the majority of objects in the solar system, we have very little information on. We think this is really important because for the future of humanity, for the future of space exploration, the exploitation of space, we really need an information layer. So this is something that we believe it here is absolutely true, and we think we're one of the, probably the only one, but at least one of the very few companies thinking about space this way. But it's really critical that we get this information layer right. And that's for a few reasons. So one is that understanding an object is kind of the first step in understanding how to solve problems around that object. So a lot of people say space is hard, but why is it hard? It's because we don't know that much about it. So understanding that is key. It can also really help us get excited about what's out there. So one thing that really helped the environmental movement here on Earth was seeing the Earth from space. So there's this photo called Earthrise. It's absolutely stunning. It was taken by Apollo astronauts, and that really helped get the environmental movement going. So even for people here on Earth, we needed pictures of space, of Earth in space from another spacecraft, which is really interesting. The last one is really important, and we're really helping a lot of customers with today, and that's de-escalation. So a lot of interesting things happening in space, people potentially putting weapons there, etc. If we can help provide information and help customers see exactly what's going on with other spacecraft, then that can help de-escalate potential conflicts as well. So we think that's absolutely critical. So that's the why. Our approach at HERE is a partnership approach. So we work with a whole range of different companies, and we use assets that are already existing in space, so really great spacecraft with really great cameras. We use them during their downtime, typically. So Earth observation satellites, for example, when they're over the ocean. So we've got 47 satellites that we're using today. One of them is operating a camera that we built here at HERE. The other 46 are using cameras that were built by others, but then we apply our software to do non-Earth imaging. And the idea is to have them in as many diverse layers or shells as possible, orbital shells, and then we pick the one that's closest to the object we want to image, and then we take an image using that satellite. It sounds trivial, it's extremely hard to do, but we figured it out, and we've automated that with our software as well, which is really fantastic. And some of the stuff the team's been up to over the last year has made the images even more awesome, and the insights we can get out of those really fantastic. I wanted to talk about some really interesting updates that we have. So our customers asked us for a bunch of things, and they pretty much go along the lines of quality or resolution coverage, how many other objects can we actually see, timeliness, how fast can we get those insights back, and then applications, what can we actually tell people about the objects that we're looking at. So we'll talk about quality or resolution first. Kind of improve over the last 12 months in particular. But going forward, we're looking to take more and more images. Quality has really been improved massively over the last 12 months. It's been so great that we've been able to help some of our customers and others with verification. So we've actually got an example here of the ESA, the European Space Agency's EarthCare mission. And we're able to give them verification of what their satellite's doing on orbit. It's working great, which is really good. This is a really critical mission as well for understanding more about the Earth and mapping the Earth and taking a health check of what's happening down below. Most people, when they launch a satellite, they're used to launching it. It goes up, and they never see it again. They get telemetry back, but they don't really understand what's happening to their satellites. The next thing we've been doing in terms of quality is really pushing the satellites that we're using to their limits. And there's two ways this is going. So either we can get access to new satellites in orbits that go closer to where our customers are, or we can push the limits of existing satellites. We've been doing both of those over the last 12 months. Kind of the smaller objects, we get very little detail out of them. We get a pretty scrappy image at the moment. And we get some beautiful images of the ISS, and we're starting to get more and more beautiful images of mediums, kind of medium-sized objects as well, like the rocket body there. But the idea is to continue improving over time so we can see more of these smaller objects. But we're looking to unlock what we call high LEO as well. So we're going up beyond 750 kilometers with some of our different partners and looking to unlock some of those higher orbits. Those orbits are really critical because the higher a piece of space debris is, the longer it takes to deorbit, and the more likely something is to happen to that object when it's up there. So really critical that we can get these insights on these objects that are at those altitudes. So really excited to unlock those. And we'll be doing it with our partners. And the way we work with our partners is that we're looking to access more coverage typically. So we're looking to go to different orbits, high LEO in that case, and other orbits as well. So one of the ways we do that is by building our own cameras. So we spoke about our own cameras today. So we already have a camera in space that we build. It's called the Holmes. It's with one of our partners called Turian. It's a fantastic camera. It's quite small. This camera is twice as big in every dimension. What does that mean? It means higher quality, higher resolution. There's some really great back-end electronics as well. So there's an extremely high frame rate. And lots of other fantastic details. So we're really excited about Adler, and the first one's going up in February next year in Q1, and we really can't wait. That'll be going up with Turian too. We've also got a whole bunch more homes going up as well. So we have, we had one go up last year on Turian, one go up this year on Space Machines. We'll have two more go up in November this year on Sidus and Impulse. And we'll have another one go up with Sidus, another one go up with Turian, and then an Adler going up with Turian as well. So we're really excited about all of those. And in the last 12 months, we've had our first success with one of our cameras. So we have a photo there of the moon, which is fantastic, and we'll be taking some more photos of different satellites soon as well. So Adler, we're incredibly excited about, and Holmes is now online, which is really awesome. Huge credit to our technical team.
And we'll hear more from William Crow of HEO Robotics momentarily.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
Where you're listening to The Space Show, which is looking at the Australian involvement in the Transporter 12 mission that placed 131 satellites into orbit. And we're looking at the involvement of HEO Robotics. William Crow is the Chief Executive Officer, and in a company presentation, he had this to say last July.
What we're able to do with one of our partners, Impulse in particular, is unlock what we call high LEO. So this is low Earth orbit above 700 kilometres. So the majority of Earth observation satellites are below that 700-kilometre mark. So one of the ways that we're empowering our suppliers to take images for us and help our customers is by launching to high LEO, so going to altitudes above 700 kilometres. So really excited to go into phase two of our plan and jump up there. And we've actually got a video from Impulse.
So Impulse is an in-space transportation company founded in 2021 by Tom Mueller. We're building technologies to be able to go from low Earth orbit directly out to high energy orbits, so such as MEO, GEO, or Cisluna, and beyond. We're building a few different spacecraft to be able to accomplish such a task, and MERA is an orbital hosting and deployment platform. So essentially a spacecraft that is super high thrust, it's highly maneuverable, it's got extremely good attitude control, but most importantly, and one of the reasons why, well, the main reason why I'm on this pre-recorded video, is it's fantastic and uniquely designed for non-Earth imagery capture. So as such, we're extremely excited about our partnership with HEO and what this means for their customers. And we've taken the HEO Holmes 007 camera. It's fully integrated and tested onto the MERA platform, sitting there in the clean room awaiting launch. So, yeah, we're super excited about this and to see what comes from it. Anyway, Thank you.
So 007's launching on Impulse later this year in November, and then it will be, or it's planned to cruise to a higher altitude after it's inserted into its initial orbit, which we're really excited about. We're also really excited about GEO, and really pleased to announce today that we'll be active in GEO in 2026. And this is a big deal. So satellites in LEO are typically valued at around $10 million. They're very sophisticated, capable satellites. There's a lot of them. Satellites in GEO can be somewhere between several hundred million and a couple of billion dollars. These are where the really big satellites are. And we're incredibly excited to be working with some of our partners to go up there. Sadly, I can't do too many announcements today except tell you when we're going to be up there in 26, which we're extremely excited about. So GEO, and we'll keep you guys posted on that. We also wanted to talk about timeliness and kind of how this kind of works out is an increase in non-Earth imagery missions. So we're actually the biggest supplier of non-Earth imagery in the world. Can you guys believe that? It's incredible. We've literally taken thousands of missions now, which we can't believe. So almost 1,000 imaging missions this year successfully completed already, and we're only 7 months in. And we feel like we're just getting started. We're just starting to unlock some of the, potential of non-Earth imagery, which is awesome. One of the things we were able to do earlier this year due to this increased cadence was help one of our customers, the UK Space Agency. They were really concerned about an object that was deorbiting. It's called ERS-2. Some of you might have seen images online. It looks like a TIE fighter, and we've got some of those there. But because we're able to hit this object so many times, we're able to understand details about it that were opaque before. So we're able to understand details about which orientation it had and about any potential damage that had occurred to it. But something that we found surprising, because we've been really banging on about this problem for a long time, but is now really starting to get some traction, is about identification. So you might think that you launch a satellite, it kind of exits the rocket, it goes into its orbit, and it is actually being tracked. The problem is that oftentimes no one knows who belongs to these satellites, even the operators themselves sometimes. So identification has been something that we've been asked more and more about, and that's been particularly over the last 6 months. And wanted to kind of show you some of the problem set that's happening as well as what we're trying to do to fix it at here. So the number of unknown objects is really exponentiated. Since 2018 in particular. So we're seeing what's now on average more than 500 unidentified objects at any given time. It rises and falls depending on what's been launching and what's been identified. It's become a real runaway problem. And we don't see that curve kind of flattening out. We see it continuing to escalate. So as more satellites launch, which is actually a great thing, it's good to have more satellites in space. But the challenge becomes, how do you identify everything? And identification matters because governments that provide launch licenses to different spacecraft operators, they're actually liable if that satellite were to hit another spacecraft or to hit the ground and hurt someone. That government's actually liable. So it's really important that they know if that satellite belongs or was licensed by them or not. So there was a recent launch, Transporter 10. There are still tens of unidentified satellites that came off that launch. Sadly, some of them we can't help with. But I wanted to give an example of one satellite that we were able to identify before it was formally identified and put on the space track. And I think we were something like 3 weeks earlier than the US government in this case. But this is called ICEI-X38. We're able to identify that it was an ICEI satellite straight away. We're also able to see that it was fully deployed, which is fantastic. We've got a 3D model that we built in-house next to it showing the deployment, and we're able to verify that it all happened correctly, which is great, and came up on space track several weeks later, which was really exciting. So real show that this capability can work, and we can, in fact, identify satellites purely using a photo of the satellite, which is awesome. Sometimes we're dealing with different organizations that don't necessarily want to play ball and don't necessarily help the US government understand what a specific spacecraft is. So we've got an example here. It's actually just fallen into the atmosphere 2 days ago. It was called Object U throughout its entire life on SpaceTrack. So again, that's the US catalog. But we took an image of it, and straight away we found out that it was one of the Long March 8 rocket bodies. So it's a rocket body that's gone in space. It's deployed several objects off of it, but the rocket body stayed in space for a long period of time. And we were able to image that over several months. And we were even able to track it with our cameras and really understand what its rotation state was, and really try and figure out how that might impact different, debris creation events, or how that might impact the atmosphere. In a real strange turn of events, no one actually knows where on Earth this rocket landed 2 days ago. All we know is that it's not in space anymore. And it could be anywhere from central Russia to Antarctica to the middle of the ocean. No one really knows. This is bringing this back to the UK Space Agency. This is why it's really important that we get space agency support and really start tracking these objects and trying to understand where they're going to land, because sometimes they hit populated areas, and there has been space debris hitting buildings recently, and this is something that we should be at least more aware of, and then attempting to do something about as well. So I'll leave that there, but I think this is really important work that we need to continue doing at here. We're here. I'm Will Crow, and we're here to make space transparent. And we're on a mission to image any object in the solar system on demand. Thank you.
Speaking in July last year, that was Chief Executive Officer of HEO Robotics, William Crow. Now, excuse the pun, but in December, the company had more to crow about when another of their cameras was launched on the American satellite LizzieSat-2 for the Florida-based Sidus Space Company. First, this announcement from Sidus Space.
Sidus Space announcement. Launch from Vandenberg Space Force Base represents a critical milestone in delivering near real-time data to customers worldwide.
The launch from Vandenberg Space Force Base represents a critical milestone in delivering near real-time data to customers worldwide. Sidus Space, an innovative agile space mission enabler, today announced the successful launch and deployment of LizzieSat-2 into low Earth orbit as part of the Bandwagon 2 rideshare mission with SpaceX, which launched on December 21, 2024, from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. The successful deployment of LizzieSat-2, less than 9 months after the launch of LizzieSat-1, underscores Sidus Space's ability to rapidly expand its on-orbit presence while demonstrating the viability and adaptability of its modular satellite design. Scalable to larger satellites and more complex missions, including lunar operations, LizzieSat-2 highlights the flexibility of Sidus' platform to meet evolving customer needs. By integrating advanced sensors and on-orbit processing capabilities, LizzieSat-2 exemplifies the efficiency and innovation that defines Sidus Space's approach to delivering scalable, real-time data solutions for applications such as space situational awareness, maritime monitoring, and disaster response. Carol Craig, Chief Executive Officer of Sidus Space, said, "This successful launch of LizzieSat-2 reflects our team's dedication to space access reimagined, advancing space technology and delivering innovative, cost-effective solutions to our customers. With LizzieSat-2 now on orbit and LizzieSat-3 slated for launch in the first quarter of 2025, we are significantly enhancing our on-orbit capabilities and reaffirming our commitment to providing scalable, real-time, space-based data services. Sidus Space remains focused on delivering cutting-edge satellite solutions and growing its on-orbit presence to serve evolving market demands." The company looks forward to continuing its growth trajectory with the upcoming launch of LizzieSat 3 and future missions.
On December the 22nd, HEO Robotics issued this statement from its Sydney office under the headline, HEO's non-Earth imaging camera aboard Sidus Space's LizzieSat 2 launches into space, expanding coverage for in-orbit insights.
Sydney, Australia. The 22nd of December, 2024. HEO's non-Earth imaging camera, HOME 004, aboard Sidus Space's LizzieSat 2, was successfully launched to space yesterday. Operating as a hosted payload, HOME 004 will capture high-resolution imagery of space objects as they naturally fly by the host spacecraft. The partnership brings HEO's first owned camera to mid-inclination orbit, enabling higher-frequency images of important space assets. As part of this partnership, LizzieSat 2 will be integrated into HEO Inspect, the company's automated tasking and delivery platform. Once operational, LizzieSat 2 will expand HEO's ability to deliver high-frequency imagery by providing additional coverage from a mid-inclination orbit. The imagery gives customers access to in-orbit insights for anomaly detection, early operations support, spacecraft identification, capability assessment, and advanced pattern of life analysis. Will Crow, CEO and co-founder of HEO, said,
"Our success would not be possible without the collaboration with partners like Sidus Space. We strongly believe in the power of partnerships to shape the future of space. We're keen to work with innovative companies like Sidus Space to bring our vision of a more transparent space environment to life."
Carol Craig, CEO of Sidus Space, stated,
"Collaborating with HEO on LizzieSat 2 is a testament to the versatility and adaptability of our platform to integrate innovative technologies that address critical challenges in space. Through our monthly data-as-a-service subscription model, we are proud to support HEO's mission to enhance in-orbit insights and enable a more secure and sustainable space environment. This partnership underscores our commitment to delivering scalable, cost-effective solutions that push the boundaries of what's possible in space."
HEO's NAY cameras are purpose-built to enable high-frequency, multi-angle perspectives of space objects. The proliferation of these sensors across orbits strengthens HEO's ability to support satellite resiliency and a more secure and sustainable space environment.
That was December last year. A month later, HEO Robotics was in space again, this time aboard LEO Express 2. Also called Mira 2, this vehicle is a satellite deployer from the United States company Impulse Space.
Impulse Space, the in-space transportation company founded by Tom Mueller, is opening access beyond low Earth orbit with its fleet of in-space transportation vehicles. The flight-proven Mira vehicle uses a non-toxic, high-impulse chemical propulsion system to offer orbital transport, constellation deployment, and precision reentry services to customers from low Earth orbit to geostationary Earth orbit. The high-energy Helios vehicle unlocks orbits beyond low Earth orbit with its powerful Deneb engine, dropping off payloads in mid-Earth orbit, geostationary Earth orbit, heliocentric, lunar, and other planetary orbits. Led by a team that delivered the most reliable rockets in history, Impulse provides economical and efficient in-space transportation by reliably and rapidly getting customers where they want to go.
Before last Wednesday's Transporter 12 launch, Impulse Space issued this announcement on LinkedIn.
Impulse Space's post. Impulse Space. Mira is a go for launch. In preparation for LEO Express 2, we've completed all pre-launch checks and integrated with SpaceX's Falcon 9 at Vandenberg Space Force Base. This mission builds on the record-breaking success of LEO Express 1, pushing boundaries with upgraded systems and ambitious objectives. Satellite deployment, delivering commercial CubeSats to their exact orbital destinations, including payloads from FOSSA systems and others. Hosted payload operations, supporting non-Earth imagery NEI missions with HEO at multiple orbits. Exolaunch collaboration, flying the first ever EXO-Pod on an orbital transfer vehicle. As part of our partnership with ExoLaunch, advancing satellite deployment technologies. Rapid maneuvering, demonstrating Myra's safe thrusters in action with high-thrust orbital maneuvers. Advanced communications, debuting new dual redundant S and X-band radios and expanded ground stations. LEO Express 2 represents not just a mission, but a demonstration of what's possible. With each launch, Myra proves that efficient, reliable, and adaptable in-space transportation is not just a goal, it's a reality.
After the launch, Impulse Space issued this press release, elaborating on the earlier release.
LEO Express 2 mission updates. Last updated, January 14, 2025. Mission, LEO Express 2 status. Launched, Impulse Vehicle, Myra. Launcher, SpaceX mission. Transporter 12 site, Vandenberg. Launch date, January 14, 2025. Overview, LEO Express 2 is the second mission for Impulse's orbital transfer vehicle, Myra. Building on the success of LEO Express 1, in which Myra achieved a series of record-breaking orbital maneuvers, Impulse Space's LEO Express 2 mission aims to tackle even more ambitious objectives while debuting various upgrades. Mission objectives include satellite deployment, deliver commercial CubeSats to precise orbital locations, including payloads from FOSSA systems and RIDE. Hosted payload operations, long-term non-Earth imagery operations at various orbits in partnership with HEO. ExoLaunch collaboration, flying the first-ever EXO-Pod on an orbital transfer vehicle as part of our partnership with ExoLaunch, advancing satellite deployment technologies. High-thrust orbital maneuvers, demonstrate rapid, high-thrust maneuvers using Myra's safe thrusters. Expand Myra's collision avoidance capabilities, reinforcing Impulse's role as a responsible and efficient operator. Demonstrate enhanced communication systems. Myra will feature new dual redundant S and X-band radios, advanced software, and many new ground stations. LEO Express 2 represents not just a mission, but a demonstration of what's possible. With each launch, Myra proves that efficient, reliable, and adaptable in-space transportation is not just a goal, it's a reality.
Then came an update on the progress of the mission.
January 14, 2025. Update 1. Successful launch. Myra has officially launched on its second mission, LEO Express 2, aboard the Transporter 12 mission with SpaceX from Space Launch Complex 4 East at Vandenberg Space Force Base. Following deployment, we have successfully received initial data from Myra, verified nominal operation of our attitude control system, and are continuing to work through commissioning steps. Go Myra! This milestone comes after months of preparation. As of December 18, 2024, Myra cleared its final mission readiness review, completing all pre-launch checks and integration with the launch vehicle. The mission team worked tirelessly on-site at Vandenberg Space Force Base to ensure mission readiness and a seamless launch.
Well, don't expect to see any of the images that HEO Robotics takes of other satellites anytime soon. The company is in the business of selling the images and has ever only issued publicly a few sample pictures to advertise what it is capable of. You're listening to The Space Show.
Southern FM.
The sounds of the Bayside.
On The Space Show, we are looking at the Australian involvement in last week's Transporter 12 mission. One of the satellites launched will return to Earth in Cunibba, west of Ceduna in South Australia. That satellite is called Winnebago 2 and is owned by the United States company Varda Space Industries. Also called simply W2, the satellite bus was made by the United States New Zealand company Rocket Lab. Varda posted this teaser on LinkedIn.
Varda Space Industries post on LinkedIn. After a comfy ride to space yesterday, we successfully acquired signal from W2. Initial checkouts are now complete and we can confirm that the capsule is happy and healthy. We're looking forward to seeing Australia soon.
To which came this reply.
Tim Coote, Chief Executive Officer, District Council of Sejuna. Congratulations, everyone. We look forward to seeing you all back in Australia too.
Later, Varda Space Industries issued this official announcement.
Varda's second mission, W-2, launches with payloads from Air Force Research Laboratory and NASA. Varda Space Industries Incorporated today announced the successful launch of its second orbital processing and reentry capsule, W-2, which lifted off aboard the Transporter 12 rideshare mission with SpaceX from Vandenberg Space Force Base in California. The W-2 capsule carries payloads from Varda partners, including a spectrometer from the Air Force Research Laboratory, and employs a heat shield with a thermal protection system developed in collaboration with NASA's Ames Research Center in California's Silicon Valley. These payloads are in addition to Varda's expanded pharmaceutical reactor. Air Force Research Laboratory leads the discovery, development, and delivery of novel aerospace technologies, and Varda is honored to fly Air Force Research Laboratory optical sensing of plasmas in the reentry environment. Osprey is payload on W-2. Osprey is an optical emission spectroscopy system designed to record spectral measurements of the dynamic reentry plasma environment. The sensor will yield the first in situ optical emission measurements of the reentry environment past Mach 15 in history. Osprey is the first Department of Defense payload experiment to be flown on Varda's hypersonic testbed, which offers true reentry flight heritage for materials and sensors in excess of Mach 25. High hypersonic flow conditions are impossible to replicate on the ground, and flight testing is the only way to advance our understanding of the unique aerothermal chemistry experienced by spacecraft on their way back to Earth. Additionally, most test vehicles are not recoverable and are often limited to lower hypersonic conditions that do not provide a complete picture of the environment with adequate heat loads, pressures, and plasma formation. The Prometheus program, a partnership between Varda and Air Force Research Laboratory, addresses a national security need to accelerate the ability to test and modernize high hypersonic systems and reentry technologies through a low-cost, high-cadence flight testbed. Air Force Research Laboratory recently awarded Varda a flight services indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contract to fund and access flights through 2028. Dr. Aaron Vaughn, Air Force Research Laboratory Prometheus lead, said,
"By partnering with the commercial space industry, Air Force Research Laboratory can provide the government S&T community with a novel, low-cost approach to iterative development. Prometheus fills a long-standing experimentation gap for the maturation of future reentry system technologies."
Varda Chief Executive Officer Will Bruy noted,
"Varda is proud to leverage its flight-proven commercial reentry capability as a hypersonic testbed, which we hope will be a reliable foundation for advancing the hypersonic sector. Deepening our understanding of the reentry environment accelerates defense capabilities while also advancing commercial space. As we grow the orbital economy, reentry will be as common as launch. Varda's first hypersonic testbed mission, through our key partnership with Air Force Research Laboratory, is in service of that goal."
The W-2 capsule will orbit via a Rocket Lab Pioneer satellite bus and will re-enter at Kunuba Test Range in South Australia, operated by Southern Launch. Varda Space Industries is expanding the economic bounds of humankind by designing and building the infrastructure needed to make low Earth orbit accessible to industry, from in-orbit production equipment to reliable and economical re-entry capsules. The company operates out of El Segundo, California, with office and industrial production space.
That release focused on the re-entry aspects of the Winnebago 2 mission. A better insight into the aims of the mission came in a release issued last year.
Varda announces collaboration with SSPC to improve fundamental understanding of microgravity crystallization. Varda Space Industries Incorporated, the world's first in-space pharmaceutical processing and hypersonic Earth re-entry logistics company, together with SSPC, the Research Ireland Centre for Pharmaceuticals, today announced a research collaboration that aims to advance mathematical modeling of crystallization in microgravity, the first such framework that considers polymorphism. A molecule can exist in multiple crystal forms, each different crystal form is known as a polymorph. Properties such as melting point, hardness, and solubility depend on the crystal structure. And as a result, understanding and controlling polymorphism is essential for manufacturing pharmaceuticals. The partnership between Vardar and SSPC enables exploring polymorphism in microgravity. Vardar and SSPC researchers based at the University of Limerick and Mathematics Applications Consortium for Science and Industry, Ireland, are collaborating on research that focuses on developing mathematical models for better understanding how gravity influences crystallization and the resulting polymorphic outcomes. Vardar Chief Science Officer Adrian Radosha said,
"While the behavior of fluids in microgravity is well understood, the link between fluid motion and crystallization outcomes, especially with respect to changes in the resulting crystal structure, remains largely unexplored. Our research collaboration with SSPC lays the foundation for directly understanding polymorphic outcomes from first principles, taking into account molecule-specific parameters, as well as the thermodynamics and kinetics that underpin crystallization."
The mathematical framework to be developed will be widely applied to understand the role of gravity in crystallization of small molecules both in space and on Earth, uncovering aspects of process development that are little studied today. The model will ultimately support the expansion of the pharmaceutical industry into low Earth orbit by using the benefits of microgravity to improve drug performance and patient experience here on Earth. According to Professor of Applied Mathematics, Michael Vynnycky,
"Rigorous mathematical modeling allows us to take maximum advantage of experiments conducted in this unique environment. Combining our model with experimental validation paves the way for groundbreaking approaches to utilize microgravity to improve crystallization of pharmaceuticals and other materials."
Professor Damian Thompson, SSPC Director, added,
"We are always pushing forward as a center, exploring new ways of creating materials through modeling-guided experimentation with our wide range of research partners worldwide. In this exciting collaboration with Vardar Space Industries, we are developing, validating and applying new mathematical modeling tools that we hope will lead to inventive discoveries and innovative applications of pharmaceutical crystals grown in microgravity. Having world-class expertise at SSPC in predictive modeling has enabled us to build this exciting collaboration with Vardar that takes us literally out of this world. The insights gained from this research have the potential to transform the way we approach challenges in the realms of materials and pharmaceuticals."
The space show is not aware of any announced date at which that Winnebago 2 or W2 satellite will come back to land and come down in South Australia. Well, in other news related to last Wednesday's Transporter 12 mission, the New Zealand and Dutch company Dawn Aerospace announced that they had 28 of their thrusters on some of the satellites launched by the Falcon 9 rocket. The initial announcement did not specify which satellite the thrusters were on. The space show has been monitoring news about Dawn Aerospace's thruster developments and contracts for some time and has a fair idea of which satellites carry their thrusters. However, in the absence of definitive information, we will not announce them here. Well, in October of 2021, Dawn Aerospace's business development manager was a guest of the Space Association of Australia. Joshua Ray has these comments about their thrusters and a particular characteristic.
The status quo at the moment is a fuel called hydrazine, and it's been around for well over 50 years. I'm assuming you would have heard of it. It's got all these great properties that make it the near perfect propellant for space. You know, it's near and infinitely storable. The density of it's very good with a whole bunch of other things. However, it's highly toxic. So that's why when you want to fuel a satellite with hydrazine prior to putting it onto a launch vehicle, depending on the launch site, if you're here in New Zealand, you'd ship it away, far away from the launch site to a sort of block the location, you'd do it all off-site and fuel everything with minimal people around and put it back into the vehicle. If you're in other places like French Guiana, for example, you shut the entire launch site down for 3 days while everyone vacates and you wear escape suits and everyone looks like they're walking around from ET, and you plug it in and away you go. Green means that it's not highly carcinogenic. It's not going to cause adverse effects to the body.
And what about the exhaust of the thruster or the vehicle? How does that go in the greens sort of qualification?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So of the launch vehicle, the exhaust fume is just steam and water. It's just water. The emissions from that per flight is essentially equivalent of about half a tank of gas in your car.
And that's Joshua Ray speaking to the Space Association of Australia.